introducing this topic, helping guys understand what's going on inside of their wives. After Shanti had written For Women Only and it became a bestseller, what does the publisher always ask an author then to do? Yeah, write another one. And this one, like, is tailor-made for a sequel, because they're like, so you told the women what was going on inside of guys. Now you need to tell the guys what's going on inside of women. And we want you to write it with Shanti, Jeff. I'd always been involved in the research, but I had no, you know, real desire to ever write a book or anything like that. And so they put a pretty hard press on us to do that research and that book. And I was pretty non-committal, quite frankly. And after about a week or two, Shanti, and I'm still kind of reticent, and Shanti says, why aren't you fully in on this project? And, you know, I said, you know, I just haven't worked it through yet in my head. And so finally she said, look, let's get a sitter and let's go out to dinner and talk this through, just the two of us, where we can focus on this. And so we did. And while we were out to dinner, she said, okay, so you got to explain to me, what is it about this project that you're just hesitant to join me on? And I said, well, you know, the first book in the research was helping women understand men, right? And she went, right. And I said, so this one would be helping men understand women. And she said, yeah. And I went, I'm not sure you can be understood.
Well, the women are laughing. The men are like.
And she was like, I mean, like, what do you mean? And I said, well, it's kind of like, for most guys, we view you folks as like being kind of random.
I mean, he was putting himself further and further into the hole.
Yeah, and I said, no, let me try to explain it. And I'm grateful that we were in a public place, since you could do no violence. So I said, it's almost like, for a guy, you're standing in front of this machine today, and you pull a lever, and it does this. The next day, you're standing in front of that same machine, you pull the lever, and it does something entirely different, unexpected. And you said, and I said, and that kind of is our definition of random. We do the same thing and we get two different results.
And I'm like, look, if you are getting a different result, you are pulling a different lever. Or you're pulling it differently or something, because we are not random. We can be understood and systematized just like you men can.
So this research project began as a kind of a case study to prove to Jeff that women can be understood. And what I can tell you guys is they can. And first off, and as part of that, you know, sometimes I realize that for us guys, when we say, you know, I'll never understand her. And we use that as kind of an excuse to not try to understand her. Look, it's impossible, so why bother? And sometimes that's what we're doing, when the reality is she can be understood. Now, that was one hurdle to get over, you know, that for me to write the book. The second one was, yeah, okay, so what if we can prove that? Is any guy ever going to read the book, though? I mean, like, seriously, before we wrote that book together, I had read one relationship book in my life, and that was only because I had to in the premarital counseling class in order to marry her. So I was kind of like, you know, to the publisher, I don't really want to spend the next couple of years of my life on something if no guy's ever going to read it. And they were like, yeah, but the wife will probably buy the book, you know? And it's like, that still didn't feel good enough.
Like you know, we wanted to actually have some impact, which is only going to happen.
So what we, in talking it through in a brainstorming session one time with the editor, I said, you know what? I said, And this is 2005, 2006.
Yep.
I said, you know, I love getting gadgets and stuff. And if you remember back then, when you would get a piece of electronics gear or whatever, it always came with the manual. There was a printed manual
back in
the packaging. Did any guy ever read the manual before he pulled the thing out and started plugging it in and pushing? Yes. Some people like David did read the manual first. But for
unusual.
The most guys, you didn't. And one of the reasons why you didn't was it came also, not with just the manual, it came with that little glossy trifold, the quick start guide. So I said, what if we created a quick start guide for women and put it in the book so that the guys could be, you know, up and running in 5 minutes. And if you get in trouble, you can go to the manual.
And I'm like, we'll read the whole book and you'll read the quick start guide. And he was like, well, you deal with reality. If you like, if you start with the quick start guide, then you can skip to that chapter.
So not to make a shameless plug for the books, they're out there and please buy them. No, not to make a shameless plug. But here's one
thing.
So
we can pay our staff.
Yes. If anybody does buy these books, we have advice on how to read them.
I'm so glad you're saying this. Yeah, we don't normally actually take the time to say this.
And oftentimes we tell it one-off to people as we're signing books, but I'm just going to say it from here.
And I'm going to actually address something really quickly, emotionally. So there are quite a few questions that probably aren't going to make it into the public question portal because these are very counseling-oriented questions and there's a lot of pain underneath them, but they're also pretty specific to like one particular couple. And so obviously, I'm sure it's not going to be a surprise for me to say, if you don't see your question, please go talk to Casey, talk to a counselor, talk to a pastor, try to get that help. But we also think that what Jeff is about to say will help a lot of you.
So these books, a lot of churches use them in their premarital counseling programs.
Or marriage counseling.
Or in their marriage counseling. Yeah. And one church told us this is what they do. They tell, when they hand these books out to the husband and wife or to the newly engaged, they tell the guy to read for women only, and they tell the woman to read for men only. And they say, do it with a pen in hand.
So you're reading the book about yourself.
And as you are reading through and you go, that could have been me. I'm in the 75% or I'm in the 25% here. And so you go through the book with that, making notes along the way, and then you trade them back. And you're reading a personalized copy from the person that you're married to or going to be married to. So that's just, I think we've found that those things, it opens up the opportunity to be able to talk about stuff that
absolutely
you just didn't know before.
And if you need the help to talk about it, like literally one of the things that we find, honestly, that makes a difference, if you, for example, you don't know a counselor or you don't have that kind of as one of your resources, get a friend who has a decent marriage and ask if you can go through some of these things together in like a little book club or a small group. Like truly talking about this stuff matters so much, which is why I'm hoping people sign up for the For Couples Only study, even though mm-hmm. you're going to hear some of the same things repeated that we talked about.
So understanding women.
Understanding women. Yes,
yeah.
I have the slide up.
We've
yes.
got about an hour in order to accomplish that.
Yes.
We can do it. So remember the whiteboard, the story about the women? It's like, am I lovable? Am I beautiful? Am I, you know, worthy of being loved for who I am on the inside? For us guys, honestly, that doesn't seem like a surprise as much to us. You know, I mean, the fact that our wives, our girlfriend needs to feel that we love them. I mean, if you've sat through any rom-coms with your wife or girlfriend, you've probably heard that many, many, many times. I mean, think of it. It's Julia Roberts standing in front of Hugh Grant saying, I'm just a girl, standing in front of a boy asking him to love her, love me. And
it's apparently too old of a reference, apparently. I was actually expecting more of the women in the room to know that one.
But the fact of the matter is, the fact that she needs to feel loved doesn't really come as a surprise. Here's what the surprise is, how easy it is for her to question that, to not feel loved. And it's almost like, remember that insecurity on the whiteboard? It's almost like that question is kind of there hovering in the background all the time. She's not necessarily conscious of it, aware of it at all moments, but when something occurs, something that causes it to the question to arise, it moves to the front part of the brain and it creates discomfort. It creates a sense of worry, a sense of concern, which then can radiate into other behavior that we as guys go, where did that come from?
And it looks random.
So what happens is that feeling, that thought, that worry stays there. You could be in a great marriage, and the question isn't maybe what it was for those single college-age students of, am I lovable? Am I worthy of being loved? Maybe it morphs into something like, is he happy with me? Is he glad that he married me? Would he choose me all over again if he had to today?
Which, if I can just say, is just, am I lovable by another name?
Exactly.
It's the exact same insecurity.
And so what happens is that thought, once triggered, that worry, that concern, it stays there, almost in creating an uncomfortable feeling for her until it's resolved, until somehow she is reassured that you would choose her all over again. And see, here's one of the problems. For us guys, when I married Shanti 31 years ago,
yep,
the question, does Shanti love me, seemed to be answered. And so it left my thought process, it just left. I knew she loved me, and it didn't come up. But for
women, that's not the case necessarily. So here's what we generally find in the research is that, guys, there's something in you that when you see your wife walk down the aisle and you say your I do's and you sign the marriage papers, it's like this switch flips in your brain and you're like, okay, cool, like on to the next thing, right? And you need to know there is no switch in a woman's brain that gets flipped to the, oh, now I feel permanently loved position. And that question, because of that am I lovable question, it's still there. That's the insecurity under the surface. But like Jeff said, it just morphs.
And so let me give you an example of how this kind of plays out. So Shanti and I oftentimes, most mornings, we'll just hang out and drink coffee together, read through the news, all of that sort of stuff before we start our days. And every once in a while, we'll get into a discussion. You know, those kind of discussions.
You know those discussions.
So let's just say it's one of those.
Big emotional discussions.
And the emotions are starting to get kind of churned up. And it's feeling kind of tense in the kitchen area where we're sitting. And I look at my watch and oh my gosh, I've got a client meeting that I've got to get to. So I excuse myself, get in my car, back down the driveway. Fellas, as I am driving out of the neighborhood, getting ready to go meet this client, what happens to that thought in my mind about that discussion Shanti and I were just having?
Guys?
Gone. Absolutely gone. And if I'm honest with myself, when I roll back in at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, I am hoping Shanti did the exact same thing. Did you?
Ladies?
So what was happening?
What was happening? So, guys, when your wife just shook her head and said no, it is not for the reason that you think. It is not that she's holding a grudge. It's not that she's refusing to let something go. It's not that she's being a drama queen or whatever it is that you tell yourself. It's that question, am I lovable, has risen up, whatever that looks like for her. And it's kind of roiling in her gut. And it's this feeling like, are we okay? Like, that's the technical term, guys, of what it feels like. Right? Are we okay? And that feeling, that uncomfortable feeling, is going to circle until she's reassured.
So one of the challenges for us guys is we live in our guy brains, and we really don't feel like, I hear what you're saying, but I don't know what that feels like. And if we could only kind of understand what it feels like, that unease, that discomfort, perhaps then we could be more empathetic and more focused and purposeful in trying to seek a solution for our wives. So here's, I think, something that we can kind of feel like it's similar in our own lives. I used to ask guys for a show of hands, and I don't do that anymore, but I would ask the question, how many of you guys out here never ever have had to worry or do worry about how you're going to provide for yourself or for your family, your career, you know, your financial future, all of that stuff? It just never comes up. It doesn't arise on your grid. You just don't think about it. You don't worry about it ever. And when I would ask for a show of hands, never did I get anyone to actually raise their hand.
We actually had one. We remember we were in Wichita, Kansas, doing an event for training counselors and pastors, et cetera, on our research. And this one hand, when he said that, you know, how many of you feel like you're never going to have to worry about providing for your family? This hand shot up in the front row. And everybody was like, huh? And it was a Catholic priest.
Okay. So outside of that niche of Catholic priests, for the rest of us guys, most guys will admit that, well, yeah, it's kind of always there in the back of my mind. It's not there always front of mind present, but it's always kind of there circling. I'm aware. And the reason is because, you know, the economy could go south, or our company could lose some of its biggest accounts, or if I'm honest with myself, I could be 3 or 4 serious mistakes or errors away from getting fired. And so I've always got to be kind of aware and alert to things. That is very similar.
And you were talking to a group of women in a focus group.
In a focus group shortly thereafter, after I'd heard a guy put it this way, and I explained that to them, what was going on. And one woman raised her hand and goes, that's just how we feel about you guys and our relationship. We feel like, not that we're 3 or 4 arguments away from getting divorced, but we could be 3 or 4 arguments away from there being some distance being built between us in a way that's really negative. So we're always aware
always
of that.
There.
And so if you can understand how uncomfortable, fellas, that feeling of when you're concerned about how are we going to make it, you know, we got a mortgage, we got these things, that has some similarities to that feeling of discomfort that they can oftentimes feel about us and our relationship with them. So kind of you're asking, okay, that's a lot of information, but really, what do we do about it? You know, when we first started, excuse me, when we first started doing some of these talks, I would try to give the guys just tons of information. And the guys would usually meet me out in the lobby with this kind of glazed look. I go, yeah, that was a lot of stuff. That was pretty good, I think. But could you just tell me what to do? That's really, I mean, you give me a business plan, I can execute on it. And so from this point on, I've kind of laid the foundation. We're going to kind of work in the business plan type thing of what to do. So first thing to do is recognize what could cause these kind of feelings of insecurity, this question to arise in her mind. And then what do we do about it? So kind of think of it as restorative. How can we fix something that's been triggered? The second thing solution I'm going to give you, though, is a preventative solution, which is way better. Because the preventative solution is, even though these things would ordinarily trigger this worry, this feeling, this doubt about the relationship, it doesn't. So let's start with the restorative solution. So first off, we've got to identify what could cause that feeling to arise. We've already explained one: conflict. The argument Shanti and I had over the coffee in the morning, that's classic. And you know what an argument looks like. You know what it feels like. You're already there. A second one is, well, it tends to be Jeff's preferred method for dealing with every argument with Shanti, and that is withdrawal. I turn and walk away. So she's talking to my back, which gives me some relief for the moment. But for you?
That, you know, that are we okay? It, as you drive away or you walk away or you withdraw, it gets worse. It's like, like that feeling of are we okay only heightens.
And see, here's the thing about this. One of the reasons why I walk away, and a lot of guys have presented that they do this same thing, is because we're stirred up inside. We're stirred up. And we don't necessarily know how to explain it. So for example, when we're arguing, when we're having a thing, I got to tell you, Shanti, the way she processes thoughts and communicates them, it's like she's been blessed with the latest NVIDIA chip in her brain. It's working super fast. While I'm chunking along with a 1980s, you know, CPU or whatever, my processing is just not happening. So she'll say something like, so what are you thinking right now?
What are you thinking about what I just said?
And I'll go, I don't know.
And I'm like, how can you not know what you're thinking, right?
I know I'm upset. I know I'm angry, you know, all of those emotions, feelings. But I can't find actually the words to explain it. And honestly, I actually thought that there was something wrong with me. I thought I was kind of defective in my ability to process thoughts and that. And could you share, just take a real quick side trip and talk about a little about the neurology?
Sure.
The neuroscience.
When do we have
this?
To stop this session? 11:05.
Yeah, we've got 40 minutes.
Okay, all right. So this is a real quick dive so that you guys know. You know how we were talking about men and women's brains processing things a little bit differently? So this is super simplified. So if there's any neuroscientists in the room, I apologize from the beginning that this is oversimplified. But I have consulted with neuroscientists who've said, yep, this is actually a fairly decent example, a word picture of how some of the brain wiring difference works. So it turns out that for men's brains, and literally there's like a superhighway in the men's brains called the corpus callosum.
And in both male and
yeah,
female.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, in every brain, there's a corpus callosum. Sorry.
Connecting but the two hemispheres.
It's connecting the two hemispheres of the brain. It's wired differently and structured quite a bit differently in the male brain than the female brain. And when I was doing my PhD and going through all the neuroscience classes and whatnot, I will confess, this stuff is like makes my brain hurt. It is so complicated. So again, simplified. But for the men's brains, a word picture might be that think of like at these giant data centers here or like in the Southwest where you've got those giant supercomputers that can do trillions of calculations a second, like launching, you know, the space race and all that kind of stuff. Think of a guy's brain as having like several isolated supercomputers that aren't particularly networked much together, maybe a little bit. And so for a guy, his brain processes a signal, something he's thinking about, something he's worrying about, something he's processing. He processes it one thing at a time, which I know is a shocker to everybody in the room, but he processes one thing very deeply. And it goes into this giant supercomputer processing it very deeply, and that gets done, and then it moves on to the next one and processes that very deeply, and then the next one. This is in general, right? A woman's brain is more like an analogy might be that you have, instead of a few giant supercomputers that aren't networked as much, you have 10 million personal computers that are all networked together and all functioning at the same time. And by the way, men's and women's brains, you get to the exact same IQ, but you get there completely differently. And so for a woman's brain, you're more likely, for the women, you're more likely to do this very fast kind of blink processing. I don't know if any of you remember the book Blink, like a number of years ago, about the super fast, like, initial idea. So women's brains, very surface level, do that, oh, here's what I'm thinking, and here's what I'm thinking, and you go deeper and deeper and deeper in layers. And so you get to decisions, and often, sometimes the same decision, but you do it differently. And this is why for many men, this is one reason, why for many men, you can have like an argument over dinner time about what are you thinking? I don't know. And then the next morning at breakfast, he's able to talk about it.
Because didn't you say that in that for a man, it is not unusual
The signal that in a woman's brain can pass instantaneously, again, very much at a surface level, like don't misunderstand that these are equivalent, but at a surface level, a signal can pass instantaneously. In the male brain, there's been some studies that have found that same process can take 12 hours to pass because he's doing this very deep brain work.
Before he can have the words to articulate it. So the conflict, withdrawal, next trigger oftentimes is silence. You know, as one woman said, if my husband is quiet or silent, it must be because of me or about me. And the truth of the matter is, in some cases, sure. In other cases, his favorite sports team just lost. And he doesn't want to talk to anyone. You know, that kind of is the way that we roll at times. But just recognize, fellas, that your silence isn't just silence that affects you. And then a fourth one is life is busy. Sometimes you just get overworked, overdone, overwrought, all of those things, and you're just exhausted. And she could be in that case, which makes her then more susceptible.
The emotional bank account, you said,
has been depleted. Yep. And you're more susceptible to, you know, these kind of worries and thoughts. And another one that we can't necessarily deal with here, but we all know it. We also have an enemy who is whispering into all of our ears all the time untruths, lies about us, ourselves, about our spouse, about God. All of those things are happening there. So, okay, you tell me those are things I can recognize that perhaps when she's feeling this way that one of these things could have been the cause of it. What do I do about it? Well, if you're like me, if you're one of those guys that needs that time to kind of think through, to figure out what to do about it, you know, if you will do this one thing, I will tell you, it will give her the calmness, the assurance that, you know, this is going to be okay. And I can say that with confidence because we asked on the survey, and it was something like
95%.
95% of women said, if my husband will do this, even when we're in the middle of a conflict, it will give me peace. And so here's what you do. Something like this. It's like, honey, I'm really angry right now. I just am. And I gotta have some space to myself. But I want you to know we're okay. Yeah. So what I've just done there.
What you've just done is said, honey, this isn't the beginning of those three or four arguments of things going downhill. This is just an argument. We'll be fine. We'll come back and talk about
now,
it later.
Now, there is a caveat to this one. At some point, fellas, you got to come back. And I do say that because a woman said, look, if I have to chase him down two or three days later, some of the goodwill that he built by saying that and reassuring me in the initial moment is kind of lost. So here's another good point, though. One woman said that, look, if he's willing to come back and reengage, actually, that oftentimes matters way more than whatever we were at odds about in the first place. Because he's valuing me and trying to get to closure, at least on this thing. So those are all the things that we can do to restore, you know, kind of equilibrium here once it's been upset. But the preventative solution, way better. Way better. Because as I said, even though there may be conflict, even though there may be silence, all of those things, it doesn't trigger inside of her all these worries and thoughts about the relationship. And how do you do that? It's really simple. Honestly, it is simple. And it can be summarized by just one simple word: pursuit. Now most guys are going, can you unpack that one for me? And yeah, I can. You guys already know what it is. You're actually all experts at it. It's what you did to make her fall in love with you in the first place.
It's what you did when you were dating.
And now most guys have kind of an alarmed look on their faces.
There are some alarmed looks, actually.
Are you kidding me? That was exhausting. I got a job now. I mean, we have a mortgage, kids, all those things. How in the world can I do what I did when we were dating? We're not asking you to do all of that. Actually, those big things that you did, the concert tickets or the special meal or all those things, she's not going to complain if you want to reintroduce some of those into your current relationship. But that's not really what we're talking about with pursuit.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is something different.
Yeah. Think about it. Guys, think about it this way. When you were dating, the main thing that you were doing every day wasn't the stuff you were arranging. Although, like Jeff said, that's fine. That's great. The main thing that you were doing is you were sending her a message every day. That's what you were doing. And the message was, I love you today. I'm glad you're mine today. I want to be with you today. And that message is speaking directly to that am I lovable kind of question. And you can continue every day to send her that message. And it's the little things. I mean, truly, that's what we found statistically. It is the little things that send that message. And it's as simple as you reach across and you take her hand when you're walking across a parking lot. That says, I would choose you all over again. Or you're sitting at church or you're out to dinner with another couple and you put your arm around her in church. I saw that, buddy. That was good. Like, impressive. I right on cue. That says you're mine, right? And now all the guys in the room are like, dang.
Maybe I got a yawn.
And here's the thing for the women. If he starts doing that kind of stuff and he puts his arm around you, don't go, you are only doing that because she told you to, okay? Remember, believe the best. This is how we feel about each other. We just didn't know. He just didn't know this mattered. Now, and maybe for some of you, I can't remember what the number is. This is actually in the Happy Marriages book. I can't remember what the number is. It's something like around 80% of women said that this really matters when he puts his arm around me or he puts his hand on my knee when we're driving in the car or whatever. He takes my hand, whatever it is. But for some, if 80% said that it mattered, for 20%, it didn't, or whatever the number was. And so just use this as a starting point to try to figure out what are those little things. And we're going to give you an opportunity to do that in a minute.
You know, here's the problem. Again, we've spent all our lives living with our guy brains, which is good because, you know, that's how God wired us. And now I'm kind of saying that if you have the ability to try to think like a girl. Now, I realize that if you said that in first grade, you'd get slugged. But the fact of the matter is, if you can kind of put yourself in her shoes from time to time, it'll really matter. So let me, when we were doing the research on this, give you a quick little story. When we were doing the research on this particular topic, still remember, it was like midday one day, and I went, you know, I'm kind of hungry. You want to go down the street to that little sandwich shop, grab something to eat for lunch? She said, sure. And so we get in the car, drive down to this little shopping center area, Shante's talking, and we get out of the car, and as we exit the car, we're walking down between the rows of cars toward the center, and she's kind of out in the middle of the aisle of the row, and I'm next to the things, and she's talking, and I'm, you know, listening, and I notice that there is a car that has turned down our particular row, and so I walk over to her and kind of pull her close to me, and we walk into the little sandwich shop. That was it. The next day, we had a focus group of about 10 women. It was me and another guy, and we were trying to understand what's going on inside of women's heads. And Shanti was at the whiteboard on this particular topic of what are some of the little things that guys can do that send a very positive signal to you that you're mine, I care for you, all of those sorts of things, pursuit. And she said, well, just yesterday, Jeff and I were walking through a parking lot, and he came over to me, and he put his hand in the small of my back and pulled me close to him as we walked through the parking lot into the little shop. And all the women in the focus group went, aww. Yeah. It amazes me every single time. Because, fellas, I did not get your wives in here and tell them, on this cue, you're supposed to do this. That's exactly what happened in the focus group. And me and this other guy looked at each other like, are you kidding me? Because let me tell you what was going on in my head the day before. We exit the car, and she doesn't see that car. She's still talking. It's going to hit her. And I hesitated about going over to her and pulling her close. Not because I wanted her to get hit, but because if our positions were reversed and she had come over to me and done that to me, I'd have looked at her and I'd said, I saw the car. I wasn't going to let it hit me. She had none of that. She didn't think at all what I was thinking. And if I allowed myself to just live my life with my thoughts and think that those thoughts are probably what her thoughts are, we'd miss out on so many opportunities to come together and to thrive. So just telling you, you got to kind of put some of your thoughts aside.
And these little things that, and we're going to give you an opportunity to talk about those in a minute. But these little things, what you're doing is you are building, whether it's something physical like putting your hand on the small of her back or something like you're texting her like in the middle of the day saying, man, this has been a rough day. I love you so much. I can't wait to see you tonight. Like she will screenshot that text message, right? Like so whatever that is, whatever it looks like for you guys, when you do those things regularly that signal pursuit, what you're doing is you are building an absolute sense of security under the surface. Every guy knows that, and you know, we ask guys, what do you think women need? Many men will say they need security. But for men, you think that means financial security. And yeah, okay, maybe that's important for a bunch of women. That's a whole different topic we don't have time to get into. But more important is emotional security and knowing that you're always going to be there for her. You two are always going to be close. And that is, that sense of security is so important that if those triggers happen, if there's conflict, if there's withdrawal, if there's hurt feelings, it still doesn't make a difference because it doesn't change the fact that she knows that you're there for her.
So one more story, and then we'll switch to another topic. Back when the book first came out, we did a lot of radio and some television interviews, and we were in Dallas getting ready to do a television interview talking about the book and the research. And before we went on stage, the producer was asking us a series of questions, you know, just to try to get the feel for how this whole thing could go. And you know, I was telling him the thing about the whiteboard and, you know, how important it is for a woman to hear and know that her husband finds her beautiful. And, you know, when our daughter was little bitty, you know, I used to tell her probably every day, if at the most it went 2 days, how beautiful she was inside and out. Because I wanted her to grow up to be a woman who was confident and believed that, such that she wouldn't go looking for affirmation in the wrong ways to kind of fill that up, that she just knew that she was beautiful. And I was sharing that with this group of women in a focus group. Maybe it was another day. But, you know, one of them said, "So you tell Shanti the same thing?" And I went, "Well, no." And they said, "Why not?" And I said, "Well, she's a grown-up, you know? She's got a career, job, she's successful, confident, all that stuff." And they said, "Yeah, but we're still just pretty much that little girl inside." Again, looking to the most important man in our lives to affirm this area. And so I shared that kind of story with this producer. And I was saying, you know, but the challenge for a lot of guys is that if you haven't been in the practice of telling your wife, "You know, you're so beautiful," something like that, it feels, if you start it, it almost feels insincere or artificial. We feel it, but it doesn't feel like it's coming naturally to us. And he goes, "You know, this resonates so much with me." He said, "You know, let me tell you a quick story." He said, "When my wife and I were young marrieds, probably married under 5 years or 6 years, and we had 3 kids under the age of 5. And he said, "I was working at a local television station as a producer, making no money. We were tired all the time. But yet we committed to each other that we would try to find a way to do a date night once every 2 weeks at least." And he said, "So we would get one of our sets of parents to come and watch the kids. And we would go out to this little hole-in-the-wall pizza place." He said it was nothing special, but it was our place. And he said it was the kind of place that when you'd walk in, they had a chalkboard, you know, and they would write a trivia question on the chalkboard. And if you got the trivia question right, you got a free soda with your pizza. Now, this was all pre-Google. So he said, "We walk in that night, and he said it was a sports question." And he says, "Confession, I know nothing about sports. But I knew the answer to this particular question. I just couldn't think of it in the moment." So here was the question. "Famous Notre Dame football coach who coached the Gipper." Okay? And he said, "So I knew the answer to that, but I just couldn't quite put my finger on it." So we order our pizza, we sit down, my wife's talking, and I'm sitting there nodding, but I'm working to pull that answer up deep down in the memory core of my being. And he said, as I'm sitting there, our pizza comes, and she's still talking, and I'm still nodding and thinking. And finally, I got it. And before I realized what was happening, I blurted out, "Newt Rockne." And she looked at me and she smiled. And we were eating our pizza, talking, and I noticed she kind of flushed. And she was getting all fizzy and giggly as I would say things. And finally, I went, "So what's going on between us right now?" And she looked at me and she said, "You've just never said that to me before." And I went, "Right. What exactly have I never said to you before?" And she said, "You rock me." And I went, "Yes." Right. And then he said, 3 or 4 months later, when I came clean to her, we had a great laugh. And whenever I want to tell her how beautiful she is to me, I simply say, "Newt Rockne." It can be that simple, fellas. If you will do some of these little things day to day and practice them, like him, date night, you know, every once in a while, and put your wife to let her know how much you value her, I guarantee you, you will get benefit. You will get credit for even boneheaded things that you do. She will think that they're endearing. I mean, it's the way it works. And these are all, again, things that we can do.
Because you have built that security, that's what's happening.
So this next topic, it seems like almost like a little side easy one, but we've found from many people, from so many men and from women who go, that explains something. Thank you for sharing it. So we're going to make a quick jog onto this one before we go into the polling stuff. We might have time for something else, but we'll see. What we found from the research is that men and women's brains, no surprise, different in the way that they process kind of thoughts and emotions. They just do things differently. And so the best illustration we've come up with, at least that I think, is to describe each of our brains as kind of a computer desktop. For the guy's brain, it's like our, you know, you're looking at the monitor, and we have one window open up at a time. And we are working on whatever that task, thought, feeling, emotion is. We work it. We arrive at a spot that we think is conclusion, solution, whatever it is. We click the X, it goes away, and we pull up the next one. And we work through that similar fashion. It feels very sequential to us. That's kind of just the way we do it. Our wife's desktop has like 10 windows.
20.
Open at the same time. And they're toggling between all these different tabs or windows, whatever you want to call them.
All these different thoughts,
feelings, emotions.
Worries.
And they're just there, and they're doing it. How they do it, I don't know, but they're doing it. They tell me they're doing it. And it's not only that, but it's almost like their desktop then has also been infected with a virus. Because another window pops up on the screen that they don't want there. Some worry, some thought, some feeling that they really don't want there. They click the X to make it go away, like we would, and it pops back up. They click the X, make it go away, and it continues to pop back up. They can't make it go away. Like for us guys, remember the whole thing of driving away from the neighborhood after the argument? I just clicked the X and made the thought and feeling go away. Women have no idea how that happens. So here's what we do. Let's say that it's a case where Shanti feels like a colleague at work has been offended by something or whatever, and she's now told me this thing three or four or
and
five.
And maybe it's a Friday.
Yeah, and she can't resolve it in the moment. It's just whatever, it can't be addressed in the moment. And so, but she's told me now her thought about it several times. So me as a guy, gosh, I love being a guy. Because I give her this amazing advice, which is, honey, just don't think about it. Click the X, make it go away. How great are we as guys that we can do this?
And we as women have no clue what you mean.
Yeah.
Because that is going to keep popping back up. We're actually now, once I learned this, I'm like, I am stinking jealous. I mean, seriously.
It's why, honestly, and this is true. You know, when we were first married, you know, Shanti would ask that question. Every guy knows. Every wife has asked it. So what are you thinking? And every guy has answered, nothing. She thought I was not wanting to share my thoughts with her. That I just was, maybe I was thinking something that I was embarrassed by or whatever. And so she kind of was disappointed and feeling like he's walled some part of his life off from me, that he's not letting me in. And she was disappointed until in this research and things, and we found out, she found out that when I said nothing, I was actually thinking nothing.
Yep.
It was as if the computer was on, but the screensaver was up and there was no processing taking place. It's actually a delightful state of mind.
So here's the thing, just as a quick note for the women, I was shocked when I actually discovered this. There is a state of being in the male brain that does not exist in the female brain. It's called a neural rest state. It's a screensaver. I'm so jealous. Anyway.
So in learning
bottom line, when you talk about the fact that for women, we have these windows that they're going to keep popping up. Here's the to-do that comes with that, is to recognize that if you say, honey, just don't think about it, she's not going to be able to, because you're saying click the X, and that, I can't remember what the number is, but it's more than 80% of women's, like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so instead, in general, if it is something that is continuing to bother us in this way.
And it doesn't even have to be relationship between
no,
us.
No, it can be
anything.
It can be anything. That in often, for many women, what that is going to require is that she's going to need to take some action that will help her close that window. And so, like, okay, silly example. Guys, I'm going to give you a silly example, but it's these silly examples that tend to make life, right? So you drive away to the movies, and she starts saying, as you get closer to the movie theater, did I close the garage door? I can't remember. Did I close the garage door? Now, you might have before said, honey, you always close the garage door. I'm sure it's fine. There haven't been many robberies in our area anyway, you know, like whatever. Now that you know this about women, is she going to be able to enjoy the next 2 hours of the movie? Right. So
it's crazy. For us guys, that's just crazy talk.
So here's the thing that for a woman, here's the type of thing, everybody's different, but here's an example of what might help. Instead of, and I don't mean to sound like pejorative, I truly, or offensive, instead of sort of making her feel kind of stupid for needing to take some action, if you will instead say, is there something that would help you feel better? And like, for example, to have our neighbors across the street look out the window and tell us whether the garage door is open. Like, absolutely call them. Like, as opposed to, you don't need to call them, come on. Like, if you will honor the fact that...
Go ahead.
If you'll honor the fact that this is something that actually kind of emotionally matters to her, even though she kind of feels foolish for it mattering, and instead say, do you have an open window? Is there something you need to do? That is like the craziest, simplest way of making her feel loved. It's crazy.
Or the guy could say, how about I call the neighbors across the street and ask them if our garage door is down?
We do have to be realistic about it.
Okay. So
but yes, that would be even better, but let's be realistic.
So again, guys, if we can put ourselves a bit more in their shoes and what this feels like, it helps us become a bit more empathetic to what that, you know, struggle is. So let me give you a situation. It's Friday afternoon, getting on to Friday evening, and you're sitting in your cube. I'm sitting in my cube working away, and it's been a bad week for the company. The company just lost its biggest client, which was represented more than 50% of the company revenues, and I was a project manager on that particular client. Boss walks past my cube on his way out the door for the weekend, and he says, hey, Jeff, I'm going to need to talk to you first thing Monday morning in my office. See you later.
See you on Monday.
How's the weekend, guys? Yeah, so you come home, and it's roiling, and you tell your wife what has just happened.
And maybe you tell her again.
And you talk about it again. Maybe a couple more times. And she says, well, you know, nothing you can do about it until Monday morning. So just don't think about it. How good does that feel? Yeah. Yeah, that's what it feels like. So is there a different way we could think about this?
There is. So here's the thing, guys. She just told you in that scenario to click the X. And it's really challenging for you to click the X and make that go away because it's something that is emotionally important and bothersome to you. And so your wife, just think about it from now on. You know what this feels like. You just use it often for different things. And for women, now that you know, it's often even day-to-day things, not even the big ones. So there is a way that you can think about this, though. And let's use the example of clicking the X with relationship stuff between the two of you. Like when the are we okay stuff comes up. So imagine that that situation is the exact same thing where the boss has said that, done that, talked to you on Monday in my office. He walks away and you are left feeling, are we okay, right? As a guy, it's just you're thinking about it, about your employment, okay? And your ability to provide for the family and all the things that come with that. Now imagine that 5 minutes later, your boss comes back by your cube and says, Jeff, I feel like I left you with the wrong impression. Like, yeah, this has been a really bad week, but you know, for the last number of months, we've been cultivating another client who's about to step in, and I wanted to make sure that you're going to be available to be one of the project managers on the job. That's the reason that I want to see you on Monday morning. Now, what has just happened is that, are we okay? You've just been reassured, okay? Just the same way, guys, that we're telling you that when your wife has that are we okay feeling, that that reassurance is so important. And here's the next thing. How grateful are you to your boss that he came back and said that rather than leaving you in this roiling state? That is the same gratitude your wife feels for you when you reassure her of your love, even though in your mind, of course she should know that I love her. I told her when we got married. If anything changes, I'll let her know, right? Like, you're like, of course she should know that I love you. But just remember, two different sets of insecurities, so we question that. And so this process, if you will at least start trying to put this into place and looking for the opportunities to reassure her and to put that pursuit security under her, it makes such a difference.
I think we've got 5 minutes that we could skate through a quick one on the importance of listening.
Okay.
So if
Absolutely.
We try this really fast, I think we can dig out a couple of nuggets for you guys to take away. So we've all heard, she doesn't want you to fix it. She just wants you to
listen.
Okay, so I had no idea what that meant, honestly. I mean, what I thought it meant until we did the research was, I sit there and let Shanti talk until she's done, and then I offer my solution to whatever the problem was, right?
Let the words run out.
Let the words run out and then fix it.
No.
Because I listened.
No.
Okay. So why don't you help us at least understand what
listening means to a woman. So here is the short version of what listening means to a woman. This will just get you started. But it's back to a lot of the differences in the emotions and the brain wiring and whatever. So guys, here is what you have to recognize that is highly likely in your mind when you try to listen. And what's happening is you try to apply that into listening to your wife and it doesn't work, because for most men, and this is actually going to be news to most women, for most men, when you're listening to something, especially that has a lot of emotions that are jangling in it, all of those emotions actually for a man can sometimes kind of fur up the gears and make it hard to think and process and focus in on what's being said and think clearly and figure out a solution. So their whole lives, starting when they're relatively young, like young teenagers, men have trained themselves that when someone comes to them with all this emotion, all this jangling emotion, they filter out the emotion, filter out all those jangling feelings so that they can focus in on the problem and think clearly and figure out a solution, okay? What you need to know, guys, is all those jangling feelings that you're so used to filtering out, that's what she most wants you to listen to. And so what you're going to do is going to feel really weird the first few times that you do this. But you can learn to do this. And it's actually doesn't take very long. You just have to practice it a couple of times. Is at the beginning, there's going to be a step one and step two. And by the way, I am not going to tell you to take off your Mr. Fix-It hat. You are a Mr. Fix-It. That's one of the ways God made you. We completely honor that. But that's step two.
And she's not telling you to become your wife's best girlfriend.
Yes, and listen to everything for hours and hours and hours at a time. Right. So, but I will tell you, there, the step one is what's going to feel weird. And that is, for at the very beginning, when she comes to you with an emotional problem, filter out the problem for a minute. It's going to feel so strange, but ignore the problem and focus in on all those jangling feelings and try to pull out, what exactly are you feeling about this? What's the upsetness? What's going on under the surface? And start asking questions to pull that out even more. Like, you know, were you embarrassed when your colleague said that in front of the team? How did that feel? Man, that sounds like that would be awful. I'm so sorry. And you're pulling out all those feelings. Now, for some men, they're kind of alarmed by this idea. Like, I'm pulling out even more of the feelings. That's like throwing gasoline on a flame, right? And so here's the way to think about it, guys. Instead of thinking of it as gasoline on a flame, think of it, a better analogy is you're pulling poison out of a wound. You're drawing poison out. And you'll see all the jangling feelings as you pull those out. You'll see all of that tension start to relax a little bit. And she'll feel heard and loved and cared for. And as you see her, and she says, you know, as you start having a conversation and have common language about this, it's like, okay, you know, I feel a little bit better. Thanks, you know, for listening. At that point, then you can move to step two. Once she's been heard, and step two is where you can say, would it help to talk about a solution? Would that even be something useful? And sometimes the answer is going to be yes, I'd love to brainstorm. And sometimes it's like, no, good, I'm good, I got it. Because we can think through solutions on our own. We can't feel listened to on our own. And this is one way that you can make her feel loved. And by the way, how many of you have a daughter? Raise your hand if you have a daughter, guys. Okay, wait, just the guys. How many of the guys have a daughter? This works with them too. This is, instead of thinking she's a drama queen, no. As you try to like get her to calm down, it's just getting worse. She needs you to stop focusing on the problem and start focusing on the feelings, and you will see even a young daughter start to relax.
In caveat here, we're talking about emotional things that they come to us with. So if your wife comes to you tomorrow and says, you know, the Toyota was making this really weird sound when I would start it. Don't go, how did that make you feel?
No.
When it's a technical thing, just go all guy and solve it.
Fix it to your heart's content.